Okay,
Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Community Engagement Committee meeting for November. My name is Richard. I'm council co-chair, co-chair of this committee and introduction. So I'll pass it and I'll keep things going. I'll pass it to Laura.
Laura Thomas, she, her, council member.
Hi, Laura. I'll pass it to Mr. Crown.
Hey, everybody. David Crown, council staff.
Maria.
Hello, Maria Lacayo, she, her, San Francisco Department of Public Health, HIV Health Services.
Maria. Stephen.
Hey there, Stephen Spano, he, him, or they, them. I'm the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel. And should I pass
Hi,
it to
Kira?
Kira? Oh, hey there.
Hi, Kira.
Hi, Kira, council staff.
Kira. And last but definitely not least, Lee.
Good afternoon, Lee, council member.
Okay, welcome everyone.
I think you're missing Thomas really quick.
Excuse me?
Oh, I think you're missing Thomas, right?
No, there's no one else, right? Oh my God. Yes, please, Thomas.
Crown gets a title, Mr., and I get ignored completely. Like Richard, I can't help but read into that a little bit, right? Thomas Noble, they, them, pronouns. Good to see y'all. Good opportunity to give Richard a little bit of grief.
Yeah, sorry, everyone. I didn't see you on the screen for a second. Okay. Well, welcome, everyone. And if we could put up the today's draft agenda for review and approval. Yeah, it looks like a standard meeting today, except we have a couple of votes at the end we're going to see if we would take a vote to see if we want to meet during the month of December. You know, there's a tradition there. And then we want to also talk about deciding the date for the January meeting, because that takes place during some staff vacation time. So we have two votes coming up at the end of the meeting. Anyone see any changes they'd like to make or amendments? Okay, seeing none, we'll approve this. And if we could look at last month's meeting, please. Anyone see anything they'd like to change or? Okay, so that's approved also. Thank you, everyone. We can move on to announcements. Are there any announcements? Well, we can welcome Derek Mapp. Hi, Derek. I do have an announcement. If this goes past 4 o'clock, I do have to jump off at 4 o'clock. To get to class. So maybe Derek, if we're running past four, you could take over. All right, thanks everyone.
I have to leave for another meeting at four as well.
Okay, Laura, thank you. Do we have any public comment? No? Okay. Let's see, all right. So with that, we can move on to our HCAP report with Stephen. Hey, Stephen, you ready?
Most certainly. Thank you. So hey there, everybody. So I'll do as I normally do. I'll highlight a couple of cases. And then if there's any questions or folks want to ask more specifics, I'm happy to try and share. So the first is 2023-46. I'm happy to, and I'm sorry, I don't have the page numbers. Also, I'm really sorry for the formatting on this. I'm not entirely sure why Salesforce is doing this, but it exports everything and then makes it not pretty. So I apologize. But On 2023-46, and I'm sorry because I don't, my pagination is different than the one that you have, but this was a case where a client was living in a skilled nursing facility. I'm not entirely sure how this has gone on very long, but it is indicative of some of the other challenges that the service provider has had. But this is a client who's lived at the SNF for quite a long time, maybe 7 years. They had a wheelchair. The client does have mobility issues that requires a wheelchair. The wheelchair was, he was fitted for the wheelchair. The wheelchair was delivered and then never made it to his room like 7 years ago. And he's been asking for a wheelchair since then, and asking for people to find his wheelchair since then with no support. And so finally, with my support, we filed a grievance. I was connected with the city attorney's office. The city attorney's office has been kind of equally shocked, it seems. And actually the city attorney there that I've been working with finally did get back to me and said that at this point they're going to purchase a new wheelchair for the client. They just need the client to get linked to the supportive services there to get fitted so that they don't buy something that is not usable for the client. So that's a big success because I don't normally get providers to shell out dough like that. It's never actually my goal. I wanted them to find another way to get him a wheelchair. But at this point, I think like Medi-Cal and Medicare and the dangers with like messing with the insurance would cause more problems than them just shelling out the money for a new one. So that's how it's going to happen. I also wanted to talk about 2023-65, which is a case of supportive housing. And I wanted to do this because it's been a while since we've had one of these cases. And I think it provides a good opportunity to kind of talk about the supportive housing model and with some of the challenges that we experience, because in this instance, the client was, and in fact, the client said that everything was okay, but now as of today, the case is reopened because there are some other challenges. But and this is kind of how these cases go for me, is they'll be calm one day and then next week it will erupt again. And then it's kind of this mediation thing that I have to go back and forth on for several weeks at a time. And one of the reasons that's true is because there's multiple parties. There's the client, and then in the supportive housing facility, there's the building, right? So problems with the building get put to the building management company or the property management company. And then there's the facility's supportive services. And oftentimes with the HIV service providers, the HIV service providers provide the services, the supportive services that are on site, but they have nothing to do with the building management. So building managers, if you're not familiar with them, tend to write a lot of letters, threatening evictions, send notices, send violations of notices. That tends to kind of activate a lot of clients, especially those folks who have experienced homelessness. Once they feel any kind of effects of housing insecurity, they immediately go toward any coping mechanisms they have. A lot of the behaviors get activated. And then it's a matter of looping everybody in and trying to calm it down. And so one of the ongoing conversations that I've had is kind of making sure that we have appropriate boundaries between the service provider and the building management companies, because I feel like clients oftentimes don't know who the loyalty is to. They don't know whether the service provider is looking out for them or whether the service provider is looking out for the building. And oftentimes, to be entirely honest, neither am I. It's kind of an ongoing issue. In this instance, the client's housing is stable. That's always my first step, is to make sure that there's no current eviction, that there's no effort to remove the client. Oftentimes, that is the client's ultimate fear, but it may not necessarily have a reason to think that. In this instance, the client was told that they were at risk of eviction, even though they weren't. And so that's a little bit more egregious, but we're working through it and we'll get the client the support that they need. And I think those are the two main ones that I wanted to talk about. Can you roll over to 2023-57 here? I have a note for myself to bring it up.
Sorry, Stefan. Why did they need a new wheelchair? Was a 7-year-old one outdated?
It was non-existent. Nobody could find it.
Oh, it was just gone. Sorry, I thought it was sitting in a basement the whole time.
Well, you know, that's what I was thinking. I was trying to, and that's, you know, but it seems so odd to me that they wouldn't be able to, you know, I honestly don't know. We are very lucky that there were some reports. We are very lucky that there were some reports from providers that had been there for a long time that had seen the client with the wheelchair. And this is a client that would have had no ability or opportunity to lose a wheelchair, right? They saw the client with the wheelchair at one point, and then he did not have it. And then there were like these multiple reports of him asking about it and saying, "Where's my wheelchair? Where's my wheelchair?" for years and years on end. But nobody could find it. And so the city attorney's office kind of looked at the evidence and said, you know, there's enough evidence that this wheelchair was his, did have it, and that some point while he was under their care, he did not again, and he needs it. So we're kind of just lucky that the evidence weighed in our favor, but it doesn't often go that way. And to be entirely honest, this is kind of one of the benefits of HCAP, because had this gone to trial, like, I don't even know what it would have looked like, because, you know, unless it's like a $20,000 wheelchair, it probably would have been a small claims court case. But it would have been barred by time, right? I mean, there's a statute of limitations on it, right? I mean, there would have been so many challenges to actually effectuating a result here in a court setting. So having, you know, having an attorney advocate, I think in this sense, has really benefited the client. Yeah, so 57. So this is an interesting one. So this is a client that was receiving a housing subsidy. And I highlight this because I think you all know at this point, I'm on a mission to continually advocate for additional case management support for our clients. It's very difficult to connect clients to this case management support, but this is a good instance of why sometimes a little bit extra helping hand goes a really, really long way. So this is a client that had an issue with their housing subsidy. What their report of the issue was not necessarily the report that the service provider gave me was the barrier. So the client was reporting that they had a long-term tenancy. They didn't have a lease. They had initially lived there with their sister, and their sister moved out, and their sister was on the lease. The sister doesn't have the lease. There is no lease, right? The client just pays money to this landlord who's like a long-term San Francisco landlord. The subsidy provider was requesting a lease so that they could, you know, verify the information for the subsidy. And the client asked the landlord for the lease, said, "Sure, we'll give you a lease, but I'm going to mark it up to market rent," which would have been awful, one, because the client never would have been able to pay for, you know, market rate apartment, even with the subsidy. And two, even if the subsidy was willing to do that, like, that's a tremendous waste of resources just to ask a landlord to just give up a rent control tenancy, you know? That we wound up finding some alternative ways to verify the information that needed to be verified. But then there's an additional component, which is there are other requirements for these subsidies. One is the person has to have income. And so a person can apply for income with CAP or HSA or general assistance, Social Security. And, you know, Social Security, there is a little bit more support for, but for applying for something like food stamps or for the cash assistance program, you know, the process can be a little bit lengthier. It's and a little bit more challenging. You have to go to the HSA office. The information is not necessarily readily available. I've been there before. It's not easily navigated. And for a client with disabilities, having a little bit of help to go through that process is a really important part of is staying eligible. And so the client had not had income for a long enough time, and that winds up being what the barrier is. So the client did have an appointment at HSA. I was able to ask the service provider to provide case management support to get the client to that appointment because they'd missed several of them already. And now the client remains eligible. But simply having some appointment support to make sure the client gets there to continue to make sure the continuing eligibility requirement is met goes a really long way. And in this instance, I think we're lucky because there was case management support. There is not always. And I'm finding the barriers to case management support just continue to mount for me and for my clients. And so that's one of the reasons I wanted to highlight a success of it to show, you know, what the need is about. It's not necessarily always about, you know, making sure the client has every need met, but making sure that they can meet the eligibility requirements for their critical services is one of it, is one of the needs. And with that, I'll just make myself available for questions or if anybody has another case that was of interest to them.
Hi, Stephen. In the second case you mentioned, did you say that they didn't know that there was eviction proceedings towards them, or they didn't know? Or I was confused on that part.
So, yeah. So the client, to answer your question on point, and then I'll elaborate. The client did thought that they were being evicted when they were not. And the reason is because oftentimes they'll get a notice, or in some instances, a barrage of notices, often looking exactly the same, hastily written to kind of intimidate the client into compliance with some behavior that the building manager wants to do, right? But the building manager is not a social worker. The building manager is not a mental health professional. They just hand these notices to somebody who's been homeless before and don't realize how activating that is and the stress that imposes. And so oftentimes I'm the first phone call that they get or, you know, that they make. And they will say, I'm being evicted. They want me to move. I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't have any family. I don't have I can't go onto the street. I'll die. Right. I mean, like, it goes right there very, very quickly with a notice that says something like, you're in violation of rule number 6 of your thing, you know, comply or you'll be forced to vacate, you know, or, you know, I mean, and it's just, it's so heavy handed that it winds up being not compassionate at all. And it winds up serving the opposite purpose, right? Instead of calming a client down and like opening it up for dialogue and for trying to figure out how to make it work, it immediately sets this adversarial tone and in a way activates the oppression that the client has probably been feeling for their whole life, which is you comply or you're homeless. We will make you homeless, right? Which is a totally opposite way to come at solving a problem. And I would argue probably a less effective one. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, this is much more of a statement, Stephen, and it is in regards to the second one. I've come across similar issues with folks trying to manage their substance use, and they fall in with crowds that, you know, one or two folks that are involved with drug using in their buildings. And it's amazing how common that is, actually, and become harassed as they try to manage their usage and become afraid of approaching management because they think if they find out that I'm using drugs, they're going to throw me out. You know, what if they tell them that we've been using drugs together? They're going to throw us all out. This sort of thing. I just wanted to make that statement because I'm reminded of like how wonderful your delicate work here is around supporting the client.
I appreciate that, and I know there's not a question, but I'll elaborate anyway. Oftentimes, and this is a Bill Hirsch rant, and I can't believe it's coming out of my mouth, but oftentimes the folks that are
I mean, in Bill's absence, someone has to do it, Stephen, and it might as well be you. So
it might as well
that mantle proudly.
But you know, often the folks that have the most trouble dealing with the system are the folks that are forced to deal with it the most. And, you know, this is one of those instances. How many of us have regular weekly meetings with our landlord? I mean, how many of you want to, right? And like when you're going through a mental health crisis and you're speaking with your service, your caseworker or your psychiatrist, like, do you want to have a monthly meeting with your whole case management team and your psychiatrist and your building manager? Like your landlord? Like, absolutely not. But that's the situation that these folks are put in. And it is a delicate one. And you know, I'm grateful that I get to be there to support in those instances, because oftentimes the client doesn't really have a voice and it's so confusing. And so like, I don't even know, you know, maybe it's more natural for them. But when I walk into those meetings, I'm like, all right, hold the phone. You go into that room. You don't need to hear any of this. Like, you don't need to hear any of this, right? There's people that need to be in the room and people that don't need to be in the room. And a client isn't necessarily empowered to say that.
Thanks for the advocacy, Stephen. I've lived in supportive housing for decades and on and off. And, you know, I was in my addiction and then I wasn't. And so I've been at fault, and then other times I've been through just what you're saying. Some of these, without support, sometimes we're really stuck in the water. We go from 0 to 100, resort to coping mechanisms, like you said. A lot of these buildings, you come in the front door, you can't get to the elevator without walking by the manager's open door office. And it's very tense sometimes. They say things, they put tape on your door. You see the word sheriff 72 hours for something small, and it's really scary. So yeah, thanks for your advocacy, and case management is imperative in these situations. It really is a lot of times. Because like I said, right or wrong, I mean, if you're deep in your addiction or other things, none of this makes sense. And most of the time we really haven't done anything that merits becoming homeless, but they really put the screws to you. And so it can be difficult. So thank you very much. Does anyone else have anything for Stephen?
If it helps, I occasionally will do a Bill Hirsch rant. So.
There are worse things
on the location, but yeah.
there are worse folks to quote, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you all.
So with the ACAP, that's complete. How about we move to, I believe, Kira and Crown, needs assessment and COLA.
Yeah, I can give everyone an update. As for our needs assessment, we've done a couple of group focus groups. So we're kind of moving on from that to transitioning into individual interviews that we're doing. So that's happening all through the month of November. And we're hoping to wrap it up by the end of November. And then as for our COLA, and for the needs assessment, we have a little over 40. So we're hoping to get over 50 participants. That's a pretty good number. And then for our COLA, we wrapped up the previous one that we just did, people affected by eviction. And so now we're moving on to outreaching for both the youth COLA and then the Black and African American COLA. So in terms of those, we were actually wondering if anyone from the group were kind of picking names right now from organizations to outreach to. And so we were going to ask the group if anyone had any organizations that they had in mind in terms of for youth and for Black and African American. Anything that comes up to mind?
The three focus for the callers is still people facing addictions, evictions, youth, and the other one was?
Black and African American.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Kara, these are not specific to people living with HIV?
These are specific to people living with HIV.
Okay. Never mind.
So are you asking for suggestions from the team?
Yeah.
Well, so I know that Lyric, Lavender Youth operates, and they have a building. I think they have temporary facilities right now, but they've been responsive to me via email. Larkin Street Youth Services.
We do have one contact for Lyric. They're just waiting to hear back. So we've done some outreach there. We're just waiting now, but yeah.
Larkin Street Youth Services. And are you looking for youth living with HIV? Mm-hmm. Or, okay.
I feel like Larkin's housing program is probably gonna be the densest opportunity. I don't know how many people living with HIV Lyric serves. So that might be a little bit of a stretch. You can always ask.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be a tough one. Just, it's not a lot, luckily not a large group of people.
Yeah.
Derek also mentioned Huckleberry for youth in the chat.
Maybe Southeast Health Center for Black African American.
Southeast?
Yes.
Gwen. Yeah, perfect. Good thinking, Maria. Ward 86, right? And whole person in great care.
I can send you someone from Ward 86. From the Black Health COE. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And if any other suggestions come up, please feel free to email me. But that's all I have for in terms of updates.
Thank you, Kira. So we can move on. We have a couple of votes coming up here. Item number 8 for the December meeting. Now, Brown or Kira, you want to lay this out to the committee?
Yeah, of course. So typically, we would only meet, traditionally what happens is we don't meet in December because there's a lot of end of the year stuff happening. And then just in terms of holidays, it's kind of people feel a little burnt out. So traditionally we wouldn't meet in December. That being said, it is up to this committee to vote if they would like to meet in December or follow tradition and not meet in December.
I move that we not meet in December.
Okay, how about this? Is there any objections to not meeting in December? Also, Maria has a couple more links in for, all right, Kira, you see that? So no objections to having December off. Okay, that looks pretty unanimous to me. So it looks like community engagement will not be meeting in December. Okay, thank you, everyone. So the next one is for the January meeting. Now, Kira, this one?
All right, so for this one, since we do have the holidays coming up, traditionally staff will get 2 weeks off at the end of December, but that can be moved around to accommodate folks. So for the planning council team, we will actually be getting that first week off of January. So that would interfere with the January 3rd, January 3rd community engagement meeting. So what we were suggesting is that it gets pushed back by a week to January 10th.
Well, the Ebenezer Scrooge in me is hearing a lot of vacation time. Now, I gave you a break at Christmas, but no. So we're asking, does anyone have any, is everyone amenable to the meeting being moved, what, to January 10th?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any objections to that, anyone, at this time? Next community engagement meeting being on January 10th. Okay, looks pretty smooth. Okay, you can chalk that one up, Kira.
All right, January 10th, next
meeting.
I'll go ahead and edit that, and so some calendar notifications will get sent out for that one.
Okay, so it looks like the last agenda item here is the next meeting date, which is January 10th, and agenda items. Agenda items, Kira?
That's just if anyone has any suggestions regarding any agenda items they want to add to the January meeting agenda.
Vacation, how did the vacation go? Or what are you planning to do on the vacation? I don't know, something vacation related.
Okay, so it looks like we've taken care of all agenda items today. All right, everyone. So,
well done.
Thank you. Unless we'll all see full council in one way or another or other committee meetings. But until then, thank you, everyone, and have a great day.
Take care.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks. Bye, everyone. Take care.
Kira, are you sticking around?
Yes.
Okay, let me
pause the stop the recording.